Hear this word, you cows of Bashan who are on Mount Samaria, who oppress the poor, who crush the needy. Because you trample upon the poor and take from them levies of grain, you have built houses, houses of hewn stone, but you shall not live in them. You have planted pleasant vineyards, but you shall not drink their wine. For I know how many are your transgressions and how great are your sins. You who afflict the righteous, who take a bribe, who push away the needy at the gate. I hate, I despise your festivals, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Take away from me the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the melody of your harps. But I shall let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream.
And the second reading is from the prophet Micah. Alas for those who devise wickedness and evil deeds. When the morning dawns, they perform it because it is in their power. They covet fields and seize them, houses and take them away. They oppress householder and house, people and their inheritance. He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God?
And our final reading is another responsive reading, which I invite you to turn to, number 565. And again, your part is italicized. This is from the Reverend Clinton Lee Scott, who was a 20th century Universalist and atheist. Always it is easier to pay homage to prophets than to heed the direction of their vision. It is easier to glorify the heroes of the race than to worship the wise is much easier than to profit by their wisdom. Grandchildren of those who stoned the prophet sometimes gather up the stones to build the prophet's monument. Here end the readings. Now that I've scared you all with the Old Testament prophets, I'm glad to see you're all sticking with me. For those of you who may have been wondering, probably none of you, but just in case, bellwethers are people or things that lead the way or show the direction of a trend. An example might be the various financial indexes which show economic trends. You know, the ones you hear on NPR during that show on economics and money. An example of a person as a bellwether might be one of the prophetic women and men mentioned in our second source of wisdom and inspiration, those whose words, quote, words and deeds challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love, which is a pretty tall order. So what does that mean to be prophetic? And for goodness sake, why do we include the words and deeds of prophetic women and men in our sources of wisdom and inspiration as Unitarian Universalists? Bless you. Well, bear with me. Bear with me as we look to our roots. The Unitarian and Universalist view of the prophets of the Hebrew Scriptures to get an idea of what this whole notion of being prophetic has meant and still means to us as Unitarian Universalists. Now, we read some words from Amos and Micah, some of which may have been familiar to you because they're in our hymnal. And I didn't even read you the scary stuff. There are 19 books in what the Christians call the Old Testament, which are considered part of the prophetic literature. There are former prophets and the latter prophets. You might be familiar with Isaiah and Jeremiah as latter prophets, and 12 minor prophets, of whom Amos and Micah are two. Now, Christian ministers are very fond of preaching from Isaiah, as he is the prophet most often quoted in the Gospels. And this is because many statements in the book of Isaiah seem to predict the coming of the Messiah. And Jesus' apparent fulfillment of predictions made by Isaiah are duly noted by the gospel writers. But most of the prophets were not pre-Christian seers or clairvoyants who claimed to predict future events. They were not B.C. Gene Dixon or Nostradamus. Instead, they were proclaimers or preachers who delivered the word of God, or more often God's judgment, either to the king and members of the court or to the people in the public square. Now, they usually had two themes. One was warning about the consequences of disobeying the law by worshiping false gods or failing to perform proper sacrifices, or the consequences of making or failing to make the correct political alliances. Often, these writings were an attempt to explain why God allowed bad things to happen to Israel. And, you know, we still see this in some of those preachers today. You know, the ones who attempt to explain natural disasters, deadly diseases, and terrorist acts in terms of God's judgment. But just like ancient times, today's prophets don't always agree. Another theme for the ancient prophets was challenging people to make their actions match their words, speaking their truth, what we sometimes call speaking truth to power, and saying, "You believe in this? Show me. What have you done to show me that you believe in this?" And whether the prophet had the ear of the king or proclaimed in the public square, their main focus was ensuring the common good, whether that common good was for Israel or all the nations, as some prophets would say. Now, the predominant view of Unitarian Universalists and many other mainline Protestant churches is to define prophetic in those ethical common good terms. They focus on, and we focus on, the prophets whose primary message was that Israel was failing to protect and provide for the weakest, most vulnerable members of society. Widows, orphans, foreigners in their midst, what some Christians call the least and the lost. Now, some prophets predicted a day of judgment against Israel as a result of this neglect. We heard that in the reading from Amos. "O ye cows of Bashan." It's a great line. Others pointed out the injustices done and reminded their audience, of the correct way to live, as in the reading from Micah. "What does the Lord require of you? Justice, kindness, walking humbly." And Isaiah also spoke of this proper service, justice, leading to abundance, as in this passage. And I'm quoting from our hymnal again, folks. "If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness. You shall be like a watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail." Now, it is this idea of speaking out for the poor and the oppressed, acting to bring about justice, that directly leads to our first two Unitarian Universalist principles, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and promoting justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. In fact, in 1936, before there was a UUA, Unitarian Universalist Association, in a report called "Unitarians Face a New Age," it was written, "No part of the Unitarian tradition is clearer than that which affirms relations between religion and social service, and the record of the denomination in the field of service for social reform and the advancement of social justice must not be jeopardized. So we Unitarians and Universalists have long acted in a prophetic way, wielding far more influence than our numbers would warrant. And some of you know the history and some of you don't. So I'll just mention some of our forebears who are well known. Unitarian Minister Theodore Parker, his words are on the cover of your order of service. He had death threats made against him for his abolitionist views, which prompted him to preach with a loaded gun in his pulpit. Imagine that. Clara Barton, raised as a Universalist, was known as the Angel of the Battlefield during the Civil War, founded the American Red Cross, continued to serve soldiers and their families after the war through her efforts to locate missing men or their graves. Less well known are other Civil War participants. The Reverend Henry Bellows organized the U.S. Sanitary Commission, which collected such necessities as medicine, bandages, food, and blankets for Union soldiers. And there were a lot of other prominent Unitarians and Universalists involved in the Sanitary Commission. William Greenleaf Elliott, Thomas Starr King, Julia Ward Howe and her husband Samuel. And we can look back and read the words of all of those folks and think, we've done a lot of good in the world, and we have. We really do commit ourselves as Unitarian Universalists to this notion of being prophetic and serving the common good, working for justice. So who are our modern-day prophets? Well, the individual I think of first when asked who I consider a modern-day prophet is the Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr. It's kind of a no-brainer. One of his best-known sayings is, "The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice," which, of course, is his own adaptation of Theodore Parker's earlier sentiment. And King once said that he preached with the Bible in one hand and the U.S. Constitution in the other, and had a fondness for the books of Amos and Micah. He often quoted that line about letting justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. And I would argue that we see King as a bellwether, calling for racial and economic justice, speaking out not only for civil rights for African Americans, but for an end to the Vietnam War and unfair labor practices. He wasn't the only one, to be sure, but he is probably the best known and remembered. And now I wonder who will be remembered as the prophets of the 21st century. Who will be recognized as the bellwethers of this time in our history? Well, as you might suspect, I have a few suggestions to make. People you may or may not have heard of who are speaking and acting in faithful, prophetic ways. First is a United Church of Christ minister, Daniel Schultz, or Pastor Dan, as he is known to the members of his tiny, rural Wisconsin church. Now, Schultz is the author of Changing the Script, in which he proposes a radical progressive theology for the 21st century, and he's best known for his weblog, Street Prophets. He definitely speaks from a very liberal Christian view, and he doesn't hesitate to be blunt. As in this recent article he wrote for Religion Dispatches, quote, "I've been asked a lot lately why we don't have a politically effective religious left in America. The short answer is that there's a significant trade-off between being nice and being potent. If the religious left, such as it is, wants to be effective on economic issues, employment, child nutrition, tax cuts, it's going to have to learn to take sides. It's going to have to say things like, 'My God is the God of the poor. Someday that God is going to bring down the powerful and send the rich away hungry, but lift up the lowly and fill the hungry.' I know which side I'm on. Which side are you on? Or more bluntly, my God is the God of the poor. A vote against child nutrition or a vote for tax breaks for the obscenely wealthy is a vote against that God, and it's a vote against those who follow him. Or perhaps simplest and most blunt, my God is the God of the poor. You can be for the poor or you can go to hell. There's nothing nice about that. But then there's nothing nice about the class war being waged in this nation either. End quote. Now, can't you just hear the echoes of Amos and Micah in those words? My next candidate for modern-day bellwether is a Quaker pastor named Philip Gully. Now, Gully particularly interests me because he's a modern-day universalist, preaching and writing on universalist theology, challenging the status quo of his own denomination. Boy, I hear the echoes of Hosea Ballou from 1812. And Gully's book, If Grace Is True, explicates a Christian universalist theology just as Ballou did in Treatise on Atonement. And his follow-up, If God Is Love, explores how we are called to live if we truly believe what we say we believe as universalists. Now, while Gully remains firmly Christian, he refers to Buddhist and Muslim thinkers and writers and acknowledges that accepting insights from non-Christian sources makes him suspect in some quarters in his own denomination. Now, as a pacifist, Gully advocates for the costly grace of reconciliation over revenge in human relationships, whether those relationships are personal or political. After acknowledging that a desire for revenge is often natural, he invites us to consider the work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa. Now, I think most of you know about that. The commission brought together victims and perpetrators of violence after the fall of apartheid in an effort to bring about real justice rather than revenge. And it's probably due to the work of that commission that we didn't have a really huge outbreak of violence in that country. And Gully asks us to consider what would have happened if the United States government had chosen to take a similar approach after 9/11, acknowledging our own actions which may have contributed to those attacks. Ultimately, I believe his universalism works just as well for those of us who maybe don't believe the way he does, but still see ourselves as humanists affirming every person's worth and dignity, who then ask ourselves, how then do we live? And my final suggestion for a 21st century bellwether, whose words and deeds fit in the prophetic tradition, is an American Muslim, Dr. Eboo Patel. And I brought along my copy of Christian Century with his picture on the cover. Now think about that. It's Christian Century magazine with a Muslim on the cover. As a teen growing up in the Chicago suburbs, Patel remembers a lot of misunderstandings about his religion and experiences of bigotry that inform his understanding of today's youthful suicide bombers. It is his firm conviction that the key to dismantling the organizations such as Al-Qaeda that recruit young men and some women to commit terrorist acts is to reach them before the fanatics do. So he devotes his time to building bridges between people through speaking engagements at a wide variety of religious gatherings, teaching classes on interfaith cooperation and engagement in seminaries, where I first encountered him, and building a grassroots interfaith youth movement. Patel's work is particularly exciting. I see this as the future of faith. The organization he founded, Interfaith Youth Corps, operates on a very simple model. You bring together groups of youth and young adults from different faith backgrounds, for a common project, usually some form of community service, picking up trash, helping with a Habitat for Humanity project, something like that. And then you have them share a meal and conversation about what in their faith tradition informs the service that they performed. What in your faith tradition tells you that this is the kind of thing you should be doing? Now, he reports interactions between diverse groups of youth who discover that though their faiths may teach them very different things, different beliefs, that they are grappling with the same issues and share common hopes and dreams for their futures. And as King before him and Gully, Patel doesn't confine himself to just interfaith stuff and working on Muslim issues. His recent op-ed piece in the Chicago Tribune noted what I spoke of before, the rash of suicides among young gay men and boys, and said, many people have observed that suffering intolerance seems to be a rite of passage in America, but I don't think getting burned is the most important step in a group's American journey. We collectively achieve America when we put the fire of prejudice out for everybody, for good. And he acknowledged that many in his faith tradition really don't care about that issue, but he does because he sees the larger picture. So those are my top three candidates for prophetic bellwethers this year of 2011, challenging us, as our source says, to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. And I know there are many others engaged in prophetic work, of course. The ministers and lay people in our own denomination who responded to a call of action, for example, to protest the implementation of immigration legislation in Arizona. My colleague in Alabama, who preached an emotional sermon about surviving bullying as a young teen. And the people in this and many other congregations who step up over and over again to support food pantries, Habitat for Humanity, Meals for the Homeless, and many other programs. We aren't all, and we can't be, Dan Schultz, Phil Gully, or Eboo Patel. But we can each do something. Even a small thing makes a big difference to someone. And who knows? The small thing you do, like that one last snowflake, may be the thing to make all the difference in the world. Every single act of kindness matters.